and move on to God's Word and a new section in Matthew, which is really exciting. I remember as a child walking along the beach. As you guys know, I grew up in North Carolina, and we would make a trip to the beach at least once a year, sometimes twice a year. And I remember as a child walking along the beach, and we'd take walks with my parents and my sister. And I remember seeing my dad's footprints and walking behind him and kind of putting my footprints inside his footprints. Have you guys ever done that? All right, have your grandchildren done that or your children? Yes. So you've seen that. And just that, and you adjust your stride just so that you're able to hit, and depending on how small of a child you are. And you see the footprint that your father makes, and then you see your little footprint. And that's the idea that I think we need to grab from this next section in Matthew as we get a chance to start looking at the footprints that God left on earth through his son Jesus. And that we as disciples, as people who claim to follow Jesus, who have chosen to align ourselves with God's perfect plan. And ultimately, that's what you do when you give your life to Christ. You say, I'm yours, and I want to follow your plan for my life, not my plan for my life. And when we do that, the idea is that we're going to be putting our footprints just right there inside of the footprints that Jesus left. And so, how did Jesus treat people while he was here on earth? How did he live? What did he do? What kind of a following did he have? What kind of an impact did he have on those around him? Well, this Sunday, as you guys will be leaving here and going into your Sunday schools, if your Sunday schools are following the alignment of lessons, you're going to be learning about the disciples. Well, right around that section in Matthew chapter 4, if you want to go on and turn there, we get a little bit of a view on Jesus. In verse 23, it says that Jesus went throughout Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness among the people. News about him spread all over Syria, and the people brought to him all who were ill with various diseases, those suffering severe pain, the demon-possessed, those having seizures, and the paralyzed, and he healed them. Large crowds from Galilee and the Decapolis, Jerusalem, Judea, and the region across the Jordan followed him. Jesus is gaining a following. People are following. And why are they doing that? Why are they drawn to Jesus? I think it's because Jesus brings three things with him. Preacher three, huh? You always got to have three things. But as he went, it says that he was preaching in their synagogues. He was teaching them. He was bringing to them truth. And not only was he bringing to them truth, but he was bringing to them hope. And I believe that hope and truth, they have to exist together in order to really be powerful. And you can have truth, but truth without hope, well, you know, it's just a brick. It's just a block. But if you just have hope without truth, then it's empty hope. You don't know what kind of hope it is or what kind of assurance you have in the hope, but if you've got hope that's in truth, and truth that brings hope, then you've got a powerful combination. And that's what Jesus brought with him as he went from place to place. And not only that, but the third thing that I see that I think is easy to overlook, and it's going to be very important to us this morning as we look into these footprints to follow, and that's goodness. Jesus brought goodness. He just had goodness everywhere. And you think about Jesus. I don't think any of us have a mental picture of Jesus being a bad person or bringing anything that would be less or short of goodness. But I think we overlook that because we kind of just assume that. We take it for granted. And we don't take that and say, you know what? This is a footprint that I probably ought to be stepping in that maybe I don't step in quite so often. Jesus brought truth. He brought hope. He brought goodness. And that's why people followed him. That's why they were around him. In Matthew, in a couple times here in the very beginning of Matthew, he quotes Isaiah in a couple places to describe what this type of a feeling that Jesus brought. And then it was prophesied that this is what Jesus was going to be. In Matthew chapter 4, he quotes Isaiah 9, verse 2, and he says, "The people walking in the darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of the shadow of death, a light has dawned." And then in Matthew chapter 12, verse 21, he quotes Isaiah 42:4, and he says, "In his name the nations will put their hope." Jesus brought the light, or revealing of God. He brought truth and goodness. He brought hope. That's who Jesus was. Those are his footprints. Those are the footprints that we see as we read through the book of Matthew. And as I'm hoping that you guys are reading along with us in your homes, because we're only going to grab little snippets throughout the gospel. And little pieces will be shared in your Sunday schools. But there's still going to be plenty to read through, plenty for personal study, plenty to devote yourself into. And as you do, I want you to pick up on how Jesus lived. And during these next 5 weeks, really make a focus of looking at the footprints that Jesus left. You know, you can sit down and you can read the whole book of Matthew in just a couple hours. And I really encourage you to find some time to do that sometime. It's a wonderful thing to do. I've done it before, and just to sit down and move everything out and just to read from beginning to end. It's just a couple hours. Grab a cup of coffee, get in your easy chair, make sure you got plenty of sleep, and it's great. And as you do, look at these footprints that Jesus left, and look at how he treated people and how people responded to the way that he treated them. Well, in Matthew chapter 5, if you guys want to go on and turn there with us, that's going to be our main text here this morning. Matthew chapter 5. Last week, a lot of you in Sunday school, you studied the Beatitudes. And as we've been looking at the perfect plan that God had and our invitation into the perfect plan, we see as Matthew's gospel starts to unravel, we get this famous Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. And we're going to be kind of camping out here for a few weeks. And as Matthew goes through the very beginning of Jesus' birth story that we covered here in the messages here, and then in your Sunday schools, you would have hit Jesus' baptism and his temptation in the desert. And then this morning, the calling of the disciples, as all that starts up. Now in chapter 5, we get a chance to actually start and launch into Jesus' teaching, Jesus' ministry. And he starts off with an invitation that you guys looked at last week, and that's the Beatitudes. Here's an invitation into the kingdom, into serving. Here's what it looks like to be a servant in the kingdom. Now, after he shares these Beatitudes, he goes down in verse 13, and he says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven." The invitation has been set out, and those that have chosen to follow Jesus, those who have chosen to put their footsteps inside of his footsteps, those who have chosen to call themselves disciples, he says, "You're the salt of the earth." Now, my mind gets to wondering about things, and I think about Jesus being the creator of all that we know. He was there in the beginning. He was there with the Father and the Holy Spirit as they put the world into motion, as they placed planets into orbit. He knows how our circulatory system works. He built it. He fashioned our bodies in such a way that our brain sends electrical pulses throughout our body to make it to the ends of our fingertips and down to our toes. Is anyone else amazed by this? Jesus knew everything that he had made intricately. And so he had a world of things that he could have chosen to say, "This is what you are." That's interesting to me, because Jesus says, "You're the salt of the earth." Okay. Well, salt's pretty all right. I mean, it flavors food, you know. In fact, it's an unreplaceable flavor in food. It's you don't have a substitute for salt. You ever tried to substitute for salt? All right. Vinegar, maybe, but it's still not salt. Salt. It seasons food. What it does when it gets on the food is it takes the taste of the food and it brings it out. It brings out the good taste of that food. It helps to define that taste better. It deepens that taste. And that's why we like to use salt. In fact, using salt is not just a like. It's a need. Salt is necessary for human life. We have to have salt. Some of you hear all this, you know, salt causes high blood pressure, and then salt's this, and salt's bad. You know, too much of anything is bad. But if you cut out salt completely, which I think would be pretty much impossible in the world we live in, salt's in everything. But if you would cut out salt completely, your body would cease to function as it does. You need salt. And in fact, it's pretty interesting. Your body does not produce salt on its own. We have to take in salt. At any given time in your body, there are 3 to 4 salt shakers worth of salt in your body. 250 grams of salt in your body right now. Some of your blood pressure just went up. We need salt. We have to have salt to live. I see this and I say, you know, Jesus saying, you're the salt. Jesus knew this part about salt. He knew that every living organism needed some amount of salt. Humans especially need salt. And salt's made up of two elements that come together that by themselves are very dangerous. It's pretty interesting. They come together and make a very stable substance, sodium chloride. We have to have salt. It doesn't just season our food. It's something we need. And salt's good for so many other things. The salt people have on their website that there are over 14,000 uses for salt. Let that sink in for a moment. 14,000 uses for salt. You can pour it in hot water and soak your feet in it. It soothes. You can gargle it. Hopefully not the same stuff you had in your feet. But you can gargle it. And it helps heal your throat if you've got a sore throat. Salt is an excellent cleaner. Salt, in the old days, a lot of you might be familiar with this, before they had refrigerators, and yes, there was a time before refrigerators, they would rub salt on meat to help preserve the meat. Salt was used as an exchange, like gold, because of its value, which is really interesting because though salt has value, it doesn't have value because of its lack of abundance. Salt is very abundant. In fact, we have no worry of ever running out of salt. And yet it still has the value that it has. And Jesus says, you're this substance. And it's not a metaphor. Jesus doesn't say, you're like the salt. No, you are the salt. You are necessary to this world. So what does salt represent? Well, as we watch Jesus, we look at his footprints and we say, you know what? Jesus brought hope everywhere he went. When we look at what salt is and all the different uses for salt, I believe that hope can be used interchangeably with all of those things. Hope soothes, doesn't it? Hope comforts, hope heals, hope cleans. So salt is the hope that God has given to mankind through Jesus. It's the hope that is available to mankind. That's what we are. It's necessary for life. Necessary. You can't go through this life without hope. Just as your body cannot function, it cannot live without salt. We preserve this world. We do things that strengthen others to help them last, to help them carry on, to help them move through life. That's our job. We are salt. It's what Jesus did when he was here. He preserved. He gave people strength. We are to season the world around us. When salt gets on food, it brings out the good qualities of that food. It makes it more defined. And that's what we are to do to other people's lives. We are the seasoning. We are to be bringing out the good in other people's lives. That's our job. You are the salt of the earth. Follow my footsteps. follow my footprints, put your feet right in my footprints, and watch what Jesus does. As you read through the book of Matthew, as you look at these stories of Jesus, as you share in discussion in small groups, as you share in discussion in your Sunday schools, watch these things of Jesus and look at how everywhere he goes, he brings hope. And think about how that is the salt of the earth. And how he's asked us to be that salt. Now, not only does he say you are the salt of the earth, but he says you are the light of the world. Now, in John's gospel, we see Jesus himself saying, I am the light of the world. But here, he says, you are the light of the world. The light of the world. The light is God's revelation to mankind of who he is. And I believe this revelation appeals on the emotional side and it appeals on the mental side as well. On the mental side, this revelation shows up as truth. Absolute truth. It does exist. It's been challenged for years. It will continue to be challenged for years to come. Absolute truth exists, and truth takes you to God. It has to, because God is truth. Jesus is truth. So that's the mental side, but the emotional side is that God reveals himself through goodness. Just plain goodness. Heartfelt, good old boy, goodness. Light reveals, wait for it, light. Some of you guys are filling that in early, and you got life, and you're crossing it out right now, and you're trying to hide that. Light. It gives light. Look at the light bulbs. They don't give life. They give light. Now, you might think, well, why did I even bother writing that down? Because truth gives truth. Goodness gives goodness. You are the light of the world. Light gives light. Uh-huh. Bing. Truth gives truth. You don't just carry truth. You are truth. And truth gives truth. You are goodness. That's what you are. You are the light of the world. Goodness gives goodness. Light fills a room by being visible. Jesus says, you don't light a lamp and put it underneath a bowl. You put it on a stand. So it gives light to everyone in the room. Light fills the room by being visible. On the truth side, see, truth enlightens. When you shine truth onto something, it exposes all the false elements. It exposes only the things that are true. That's what truth does. Truth enlightens. When you've learned something, it's a new truth, you feel enlightened. That's light. Now, on the touchy-feely side, goodness. Goodness brightens. Goodness brightens a room. Just as these lights, we've got them on dimmer switches, and you can dim them and you can brighten them up. You are the light of the world. Truth gives truth. Goodness gives goodness. When you are walking in Jesus' footsteps, as you walk throughout your world, then the truth that you have enlightens other people's lives. The goodness that you have, it brightens their life. That's who you are. That's who you are as you've put your footprints in Jesus' footprints. Now, the quality of light is that light reveals. Truth exposes the mind of God. Goodness shows the heart of God. I want you to take a look back at our text and pick up on a couple words here. Verse 13 and verse 14. They start off with two words each. Same two words. What are they? What do you see there in your Bibles? What is it? You. What's the second one? You are. Now, Matthew records this in the very beginning of Jesus' ministry. He's called his disciples, and he's gained a following of people, which we read in chapter 2, because he brought truth, he brought hope, he brought goodness. People were drawn to him. Now, the Sermon on the Mount was probably spoken to more than just the 12. We know later in Matthew's gospel that he feeds 5,000 who are there listening to his teachings. So we know that at some time, Jesus gains a following that numbers in the thousands. I believe it's safe to estimate that this number would have been in the hundreds, if not larger, because of the following he had gained. And some scholars believe that the text that's brought here together in what we call the Sermon on the Mount was actually teachings that Jesus repeated at various places. And what Matthew did was collected them in one collection of Jesus' most famous teachings that he used everywhere he went. Now, if that's true, then not only was it taught to the people that were sitting there that day, but these teachings probably were repeated at various places in various crowds. It wouldn't make sense for Jesus to say all these good things just to one small group of people in one region. Jesus was here to spread the kingdom. So when you take that into consideration, when Jesus was sitting there and he was sharing with people who had followed him, he doesn't say, I will make you, as he did to Peter. You know, hey, come with me and I'll make you a fisher of men. He's saying, these people have already chosen to follow me. They've already chosen to align their path in with God's perfect plan. He doesn't say, I will make you. Look at those words. He says, you are. That is so important and so easy to overlook. Salt and light. Let's take this personally. It's what I am. It's not what I will be. It's not what I could be. That is who I am as a follower of Jesus Christ. If today is the first day that you choose to follow Jesus Christ, if you chose this past week to follow Jesus Christ, you are the salt of the earth. There's not a process to get there. Jesus isn't saying, all right, come and follow me. I'll teach you how to be salt. It's immediate. You are salt. You are hope to the world around you. You are light. You are truth. You are goodness. That's who you are. That's what you are. He's not using a metaphor. He's not saying you're like salt. You're like light. You are. This is what you are. We are necessary for God in sharing his hope, truth, and goodness with the world around us. I am a necessary part of God's means of influencing the world. Let's let that sink in. So oftentimes we read Jesus, we read about Jesus, we listen to his teachings, we see what he does, and we watch his footprints go, and we don't step our feet into those footprints. This month is all about challenging every single one of us to step our feet in those footprints and to follow Jesus wherever he went, what he did, to put our feet in those footprints. The very beginning of Jesus' teaching in Matthew's gospel. In fact, if you look down there where he says that, let your light shine before all the world that they might see your good deeds and they might worship, they might glorify your Father in heaven. That's the first time in the whole New Testament that God is referred to as our Father. And we are referred to as his children indirectly. A very personal piece of scripture that opens up the Sermon on the Mount. And it's an invitation. If you've chosen to follow me, here's what you are. Is your next choice going to be to put your footstep in my footprint? Because you made the first choice to follow. Here's what you are. Are you going to be what you are? Or are you turning back? Because if you've chosen to follow Christ, that's what you are. You are salt. You are light. Hope, truth, and goodness is what I take to the world around me. Simply because that's what I am. My faith is made visible by my actions. Jesus says, you light a lamp and you put it on its stand. He said, the things that you do, people will see those things. That's your light shining, and they will glorify God. So as you're looking, how do I do this? Well, you make your faith visible by your actions. That's how you put your light on a stand. That's how you allow people to see that. That's how you are hope. That's how you are truth. They can't see it if you cover yourself up. Jesus' point. You got to put it up on a stand, and putting it up on a stand means that you become visible. For some of us, that feels uncomfortable. It calls us to accountability. It means that we might get asked questions. It might mean that we actually need to be involved in leading someone else to Christ, which are wonderful things, but it means stepping out of your comfort zone. It means putting your footprint in Jesus' footprint. How can I be hope, truth, and goodness to the world around me? Well, I help bring out the good in others' lives. Salt seasons. You are salt in your world around you. Take this next week. Put these words into practice. Enter next week. Look at yourself in the mirror Monday morning. Say, you are salt. You are light. You are the salt. You are the light of the world around you, of those that you're going to encounter. And think, I'm going to be salt. I'm going to season people's lives today. And don't go through that day thinking about yourself. Think about how you can make others' lives better. How you can bring out the good in other people. That's what Jesus did. It's what Jesus still does today. How can I do this? Well, I can give strength to others. Because another quality of salt is that salt preserves. It helps people get through tough times. That's who you are. Jesus has made you that. So go be what you already have been made. Instead of turning around and not acting like that which you are. You are the salt of the earth. Go into Monday morning and find someone that needs to be lifted up. Find someone that needs strength and be their strength. Salt them. Preserve them. My presence brightens a room. This is where I think that we overlook goodness. See, light brightens. Goodness brightens. We forget how important goodness is. When you walk in a room, does that room just brighten up? It should. Why? Because you're the light of the world. When you walk in that office, the whole office ought to brighten up. Because you're walking in there and you're bringing with you brightness. You're bringing in with you warmth. When you walk into a family get together, the whole room should brighten. When you walk into your Sunday school class this morning, the whole room should brighten. Because you are the light of the world. That's what you are. How else can I do this? Well, my mouth shares truth. Because light gives truth. That's who you are. Put off falsehood. Put off lies. Put off white lies. You are the light of the world. You have no business messing in the darkness. Your mouth tells truth. How else can I do this? Well, the things that I do, they reflect God's goodness. Goodness shows the heart of God. As I was working with this message, I went out and I had to do some shopping, and I stopped in a couple places, and I just had all this in the back of my head. And because it was present in my head, and this understanding of just being good to people, I made it a point in the people that I interacted with, the people at the cash register, the people in the store, that I was good, that goodness came from me. It's very easy. I challenge you to try that and watch what it does to people. It brightens their day. And if you're around someone long enough, and you are the light, and your light shines, and they will see your good deeds, and sooner or later they're going to put it together that your good deeds are because of your service to the King and your choice to align yourself with God's perfect plan. you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Be what you are this week.